Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Chief Judge Siegel, and Judge Sleater. The Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding.
Good morning. You may be seated. I see old friendly faces out there from past life. So welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is May 3rd, 2023, and I know that you both are experienced. Please state your names when you start your arguments and who you represent. You'll each have 15 minutes, 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. And the podium goes up and down depending upon what height makes you comfortable. So with that, Mr. Nyvold, are you ready to proceed?
Good morning. It pleases the court, counsel. I'm Mark Nyvold, representing the appellant, Mr. Collars. There is a lot to talk about in this case, but I only have 15 minutes. So I'm not trying to diminish any other issues or arguments that I've made, but I want to focus here on this idea that Mr. Collars was somehow can be seen as having repeatedly sexually assaulted AK. And the state's argument is that, he was penetrating her and that, once he did this, it kept happening. But AK never really described anything like that. If you start with at page 330 of the transcript, the prosecutor there leads AK, or up until that point, and at 3:30.
Mr. Nyvold, can I interrupt you before you get to that? Your issue statement's a rather lengthy paragraph form, but would it be fair to say that, in a nutshell, the issue is whether the court erred in allowing the forensic interview as a prior consistent statement, and everything else kind of takes care of itself? So in other words, if you win on that issue, then you have a much better argument, I suspect, for acquittal, failing to acquit, but the whole point being is that's the issue that's really before us.
Yes, but what I've got to show is that here's why that interview was not consistent.
But I mean, the acquittal motion, it strikes me as a bit, we've had now the trial, and of course the court denied that, but the whole point, the basis of your throwing that in, and even insufficiency, which is part of the harmless error, I suspect, of a evidentiary ruling, is whether the court erred, abused its discretion in allowing that prior consistent statement. So that's kind of the beginning and ending of the legal issue before us. Would that be a fair description?
Well, I don't know if I would say the beginning and end, because the argument is that the court didn't have enough admissible evidence to deny the motion for judgment of acquittal. And that goes, and why wasn't the evidence admissible? Because the court had basically ignored that AK denied or retracted ever, having been sexually penetrated.
I think we're saying the same thing, only because that brings us back to it was an error, therefore, to allow for the forensic interview.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay, so I've got to...
And I want to make sure that I'm clear, too. The judge didn't let the entire forensic interview in. He had it redacted, right?
Well, yes, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't prejudicial.
No, I just want to make sure that I'm clear on the record.
I think everybody agreed that at some point it became, just repetitious. But certainly what was allowed in was very prejudicial because it talked about, sexual penetration. But my point is that the state had never created a basis or had admissible evidence to say that that statement was admissible. That's what the court did is it said, well, this is a prior consistent statement and it's admissible as substantive evidence. Well, the way the court got to that was basically by finding that AK had established that she had been sexually penetrated earlier. But that's not what the evidence showed. If you've got here at page 330 of the transcript, where on your body would your grandfather touch you? Like in my chest area, down in the pelvic region, my mouth. By chest area, it'd mean breast area. And by pelvic area, it'd mean vagina. So the prosecutor is just defining these terms for her and essentially telling her, asking her to agree with her description, the prosecutor's description of events.
This respondent says that repudiated is too, or argues that repudiated is much too strong a word to describe what happened during AK's testimony. How do you respond to that?
Well, you don't have to use the word repudiated. The key point is that when she was asked about these incidents of sexual penetration starting at age 3 and going forward for quite a few years, when they get to the point at which they reach the charged incident, she basically denied that. Not basically, she did deny it. So these earlier instances were not admissible to prove anything.
But isn't it true, Mr. Nyvold, that she did answer yes, it happened every summer, and when was the last time? The last time was 2019, and the it was the description of the penetration she had earlier given. That was all before the statement you're referring to that came in at the end, read right before the cross-examination.
Yeah, that's actually not what happened. She didn't give that broad agreement. She talked about on that first occasion where it's basically she's led into saying this, that it happened. But she didn't say anything to indicate that this was continuing and that what was charged in 2019 was part of that. She didn't say that.
She didn't say it happened every summer? I thought I read that in the specific question, and how often did it happen every summer? Yes. And when was the last time, 2019, that it happened? And that was because she previously explained the sexual penetration.
Yes, but she didn't, when she was asked about 2019, she denied that.
At the end, but what I'm getting at is, let's assume, as I read it, it looked like there was a bit of a break, and maybe now the prosecutor looking back would have not come back with any more questions, but prior to that, she described what happened, including sexual penetration, and said yes, that it happened every summer, and when was the last summer it happened? 2019. So the point being, isn't it prior to that last statement you're referring to where she said no, although then right after that she says, I don't remember actually.
No.
It had been established that it occurred in 2019 as well.
Well, actually she denied it. And then she said.
Right, did he touch inside your vagina? The answer is no. Okay, where did he touch you? I don't remember, actually. That's what you're referring to, right towards the end before cross-examination.
Well, this is by the prosecutor. This is questioning by the prosecutor
right.
After she, I'm questioning by defense counsel, denied it. She said, you mentioned your last time that you were at your grandparents' home in 2019 that your grandfather touched you. Did he touch you inside your vagina? No.
Correct. But my question is, isn't it true that prior to that, even if that question had never been asked and therefore the no answered, isn't it true, as the transcript represents, she did confirm the last time it happened and it being the sexual penetration, which happened every summer, occurred in 2019?
Well, not.
And this refutes that. I understand your point. You're saying this refutes what
yes.
she said earlier.
Yes,
that's
but
why
she
you used the word refuting. She had to refute something. The something is. It happened in 2019, and now an answer to this question, no.
Okay, but she was led through that to begin with, okay?
What? I'm not sure I understand the relevant, the legal relevance of led through that. She was led through it happened, and then, yes, she was asked here and
yeah.
said no.
Okay, but she denied that, okay? She negated what she had said earlier, and she didn't go back and say it happened. When the prosecutor... when she says, I don't remember actually, that's not agreeing that it happened. Okay, so at that point they have, the state of the record is she's denied that this happened. She's taken back what she said earlier. So I don't know how this comes, this testimony comes back into, back to life that he sexually penetrated her in 2019.
I noticed you didn't cite any law because I haven't seen any either, but being specifically, you use the word, well, you've kind of interchangeably used the word refute and recant. We're more familiar with recanting, although always, almost always, the cases of recanting are after the trial, post-trial, post-conviction motion, and where someone says, I lied when I said such and such. Doesn't a refuting or recanting require some statement like that to for that to fit?
Well,
what the judge seemed to do, carefully review the what we were having this discussion about, what she said earlier and what happened here, and described it as a credibility issue. Why is the judge wrong? For instance, I assume cross-examination, we hear all the time, if it's a good cross-examination, then pretty soon the witness says, yeah, I actually don't remember what happened. Isn't that kind of what happened here, except it happened on direct? I understand that. Become your standard credibility issue for a jury to resolve?
No, that was the court's mistake in saying it's a credibility issue.
Why is it a mistake?
Well, she didn't. It's not a matter that she gave two versions, and you get to choose between the other one or the other. It shouldn't have gone to the jury. She denied that this incident happened. And she never agreed with it that it did. And the prosecutor never, after that, went back and said, well, when you said that he didn't touch you or that it didn't happen in 2019, are you sure about that? Are you going to, would you affirm that that did happen? She never even went close near that. So the state of the record was she's denied this, that it happened. She makes a statement, well, I don't remember, but that doesn't put it back in the record. I think she was just basically trying to fend off the prosecutor.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Isn't that a question for the jury, though? Because there's inconsistencies in witness testimony all the time.
Well, this isn't an inconsistency. She said it didn't happen.
Well, she said it did happen, and then... at the end, and she's a kid testifying about this, she said, no, I don't remember. That's her testimony, right? So isn't that up to the jury to judge her credibility then? And which part of the testimony is to be credited?
Well, you have to have, for the case to go to the jury, you have to have evidence for them to consider. They didn't have that here. The motion for acquittal was made.
What about this evidence, the transection in the posterior of the hymen that the sexual assault nurse said was caused by penetrating blunt force trauma?
Well, that's her opinion. She doesn't know that. She doesn't know when it occurred. She can't describe what it was. It's just a conclusion. There can be injuries to the hymen from all sorts of reasons. And this was at least, I think she said, a year old. It had healed. She couldn't tell when it happened.
Tell the age of it.
So, I mean, that's hardly evidence that overcomes AK having repudiated or denied that she was sexually penetrated. If I could just go through some of the pages of the transcript that I think will illuminate what I'm trying to convey here. And on page 330, where on your body would your grandfather touch you? Like my chest area, down in the pelvic region, my mouth. By chest area, do you mean like breast area? By pelvic area, do you mean vagina? Yes. Okay. So she's, and then at 332, the prosecutor says, just take a deep breath if you can, that's fine. And she answers, earlier she had been asked, what did he do with his hands when he was touching your vagina? Do I have to say it? Take a deep breath. He put his fingers inside of me, I guess. When you say inside of me, can you say the word that you feel comfortable with and I can clarify it? I guess my vagina. So she's not even sure about that. Okay, and she's... basically been led into saying that. And at 3:39, so she's given an instance here where it happened. Okay, and at 3:39, she's asked, so when you were there during the summer of 2019, did the touching happen? Yes. Did your grandpa touch you in any other ways? No. Okay, answer, with his hands in 2019. Did he touch you with any other part of his body in 2019? No.
And that's page 339, Mr. Nyvold?
Yes.
Okay.
So at 350, this is the prosecutor. You mentioned the last time you were at your grandparents' home in 2019 that your grandfather touched you. Did he touch you inside your vagina? No. Okay. So that repudiates, what she said earlier. And she never goes back and agrees that that happened.
Mr. Nyvold, your time is okay. Up. Do you want to wrap it up, or you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Well, that's the main point I wanted to make, so I'll just... thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Keshani Rathnayake, and I'm an assistant Washington County attorney. I represent the respondent, State of Minnesota, in this matter. The state is asking that the court affirm respondents' convictions for criminal sexual conduct in the first degree. The core of appellant's argument is that ARK repudiated her testimony that defendant sexually penetrated her during the charged time period. So the trial court's denial of the motion for a judgment of acquittal and admittance of the forensic interview as a prior consistent statement were in error. An appellant uses the word repudiated throughout his brief, and this court has also highlighted that and asked counsel about that. I wanted to just take a moment to remind the court what repudiate means, and I looked it up on dictionary.com and gave several examples. To reject as having no authority or binding force, to cast off or disown, to reject with disapproval or condemnation, and to reject with denial. ARK did not repudiate her testimony. In her testimony during trial, she made statements that support every element of first-degree criminal sexual conduct during the time period charged. If the jury believed ARK say even one time that the appellant sexually assaulted her in 2019, that was enough to support a conviction.
Well, how are the statements that Mr. Nyvold was reading us not contradictory?
The statements from the transcript?
Yes.
So, Your Honor, if we go through the transcript, ARK stated everything that we needed to support the conviction. On page 330, she stated that the appellant touched her in her pelvic region, went on to explain that pelvic region means vagina. On page 331, she stated, he put his fingers inside of me. Inside of me means my vagina. 332 to 333, she states, defendant touched her with his man part, confirmed man part means penis, put his man part inside of her vagina, stated more than once. And then regarding the specific time frame that was charged, page 336, she states she was 3 years old when it started, that it happened during every visit during the summer, every time. 338, she says, she was asked, what year was the last time? And she states 2019 in late June or early July. So she did make all of those statements in the first part of her testimony.
But then she uses the word no later on.
Yes. So she used the word no later on after... You can see in the transcript, we had to take a break. She was kind of not doing well after she had gotten out that initial testimony that I just went through with you. when I circled back with her and asked her to go into detail again about 2019, she did answer no regarding penetration, but then followed up with, or I don't remember. And it, the respondent state's position is that that is not a repudiation. That is a 13-year-old child shutting down and not wanting to revisit everything that she had already testified to earlier.
But to bring in the forensic interview, the portions of it that were allowed into testimony as substantive evidence, does it have to be a repudiation or just, you know, saying, yes, this did happen, and then later she says, no, this didn't? So does the judge get to pick and choose which parts of the testimony that, okay, this statement's consistent with their earlier testimony, even though it's inconsistent with later testimony? Is that allowed under the case law?
Yeah, so the trial court relied heavily on State v. Bakken and State v. Zulu. And in Bakken, this court held that a prior consistent statement need only be reasonably consistent with the trial testimony to be admissible as a prior consistent statement. And then in Zulu, the court held that trial testimony and prior consistent statement need not be identical. So the court was very, very careful in making this decision and not only reviewed the appropriate case law, but took the time to review his own personal notes of the child's testimony, as well as a partial transcript that he had the court reporter provide him. And he, you can see in the record him specifically citing to the points that were consistent between the prior consistent statement and the trial testimony.
Counsel, would it be true to say that those cases are distinguished, and most all the cases we have where there's usually the inconsistencies that are not, it's still allowed in, is because there might be a time or a date difference, but as Judge Siegel pointed out, are you aware of any case where there was actually a yes, it happened, and a no, it happened? That, we don't typically see that, and I don't remember seeing that in those kind of cases. It just seems like the inconsistencies might be time and place and that sort of thing, but not really a dispute that it happened, whereas here you got yes, it happened, and no, it didn't.
And Your Honor, I wouldn't characterize it as a dispute with the child of yes, it happened, no, it didn't. I would characterize it as her not wanting to revisit what she had already testified about. To answer your question, no, I don't have a case that is more on kind of on point to this, where there was a kind of yes and a no, as the court has indicated. But I would also like to highlight that here the court found that he found that parts of the prior consistent statement were not consistent. Counsel had said that the reason that the entire forensic interview was not admitted was because it became repetitive. That's not correct. The trial court found that the latter half of the prior consistent statement was inconsistent with her testimony, and that is why he did not admit the entire statement. So he, again, was very careful to match up, and I think the parts where it was consistent, the identity of the person who sexually assaulted her, the time period was stated, when, how, you know, with what body parts, all of that was consistent and, in our position, not repudiated later in the latter portion of her testimony.
And counsel, if we believe or agree with Mr. Nyvold that it was error, what's your best argument of why it would be harmless?
Your Honor, I think our best argument for why it would be harmless is that the forensic interview alone was not the only, and her testimony was not the only evidence. As Your Honor noted, there was also the testimony of the same nurse who testified that ARK had a blunt force injury to her hymen. She testified that she diagnosed her with child sexual abuse. Her testimony, the same nurse's testimony, corroborated the statements that ARK had made regarding the injury, as far as that the injury was a healed injury, and then ARK testifying that the last time she was with her grandparents and that the last time the abuse occurred was in 2019. Also, as part of the state's case, we played the appellant's scales tape. And during that scales tape, the jury was able to watch the interview that the police did with him and noted that the appellant knew which grandchild had made the accusation before the police even told him, you know, who they were there to talk to him about. The detective also testified that the child had stated that the last time the penetration happened was in 2019. So there was additional evidence besides just the child's testimony and the forensic interview that support that in our position supported the denial of the motion for a judgment of acquittal and created a true question of fact for the jury. I want to just touch briefly on the second argument, or the first argument that counsel made, which is that whether or not the trial court was appropriate in denying the motion for a judgment of acquittal, and just highlight again that the child testified to all of the elements of the offense, that appellant put his fingers inside her vagina, put his penis inside her vagina, that the conduct happened every summer, with the last time being in 2019, and that the court, after a careful review of the child's testimony and the forensic interview, correctly decided that there was a clear question of fact for the jury. I also wanted to just briefly touch on an issue that appellant raised regarding whether it was an abuse of discretion for the court to admit for the court to allow the same nurse to testify regarding the injury, and would just note that during the trial, appellant did not object to that. And not only did appellant not object to that evidence, we actually entered into agreement where we agreed specifically on which portions of the evidence the same nurse could testify to and could not testify to. We would also note that appellant did not provide any case law to support that argument and that therefore the court should not consider it. Appellant has failed to demonstrate that the trial court erred in denying his motion for a judgment of acquittal and allowing the forensic interview to be played as substantive evidence of a prior consistent statement. Appellant's convictions for criminal sexual conduct should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Nyfold, any rebuttal?
Yes, ma'am. Regarding the Bakken case, that doesn't help the state because the problem was the testimony was not consistent with the earlier out of court statement. That's what you have to get it admitted under Bakken. There was nothing for the out of court statement to be consistent with when she denied that she had been sexually penetrated. And the state can talk all day long, but they can't get over or past the fact that when asked if this happened, she said no, it did not. And it doesn't create sort of a which is it? We get to deny the motion for judgment of acquittal and let that go to the jury. You know, they say in their brief that it was up to the jury to determine AK's credibility, but they have to survive a motion for judgment of acquittal to get there. So they're basically saying, well, ignore the fact that she made that inconsistent statement, when actually that was a basis for granting a judgment of an acquittal and should have been granted. So they're trying to basically skirt that. You know, this comment, I got to touch on this, that he in an interview, Mr. Collars, when told there'd been an accusation made by a granddaughter, didn't ask which one. I mean, you can't get much more speculative than to say, well, that means he knew which one it was. Who knows what he's thinking at that point? He's up in Brainerd, and they've arrested him there and taken him to a jail. Okay, you basically have to get into his head and figure why he doesn't say, oh, well, which one was it? He doesn't think anyone did it, okay? Anyone made the accusation. So why would he say that? I mean, that would have been consistent with a guilty state of mind. Not saying anything was more consistent with being not guilty, an innocent state of mind. And again, I've got to go back to this point that when she basically denied what happened, the state is doing everything it can to soft pedal that, when really that just sunk their ship. They didn't have anything at that point. And she never took back her denial of that offense conduct having occurred. So the state, they shouldn't even have been able to get to the jury. And I don't know how they can maintain that they get to do, they get, to do that despite not having a case that created a fact question for the jury. And just to kind of wrap up, I'd like to point out that, you know, what the state did here was basically lead, and you can't ignore how they got to this point where she's making this accusation of sexual penetration. They defined the anatomical terms for her. They put the words in her mouth. They're telling her that the pelvis is the vaginal area. They've basically just asked her to adopt what they described as the offense conduct, and that can't be discounted either. So is it any wonder that once she has a chance to, you know, think about this, she says, no, it didn't happen. This isn't a fluke. She wasn't under any pressure. There is no indication of any threats or anything like that at all, and they're not saying there was. She just recognized, okay, it's consistent with a person who's made a false accusation deciding, well, I'm not going to continue to perpetuate this. It's also consistent with that. And in these kinds of cases, we don't even like to think about that happening. But it does happen. There are not every allegation of sexual assault that has occurred is true. Okay, the hard part is figuring out the ones where the accusation is false. Here, that's a lot easier to determine because AK said it didn't happen. She's finally decided, okay, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to go along with this anymore. So that's, the state can't get by that. And they had no case to get to the jury. And then the idea that for Bethany Fast, we need a legal argument to contest now that her testimony proved anything. We don't need that. That's a nonsensical argument. She, I'll leave it at that. Unless there are any questions, that's all I have.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is submitted and we'll have our decision out within the 90 days. Thank you. So our next case is A22-1486.